The difference of this fourth industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you. If you take a genetic editing, just as an example, it's you who are changed. Yeah. And of course, this has a big impact on your identity.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Wednesday, August 25th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Going to be a short show, actually a short show today. We're going to discuss two points, really, in addition to what we talked about yesterday in regard to the FDA's approval of these unjustified, as I called yesterday, unjustified, dangerous, and I don't know what the other word I use, irrational. Let's throw that in there in regard to the approval of this drug. This thing that has been very clearly outlined, but whether we're talking about unverified Vayer's reports or real world anecdotes or anything, I mean, every aspect of this entire conversation has been exponentially more obviously dangerous than any other trial that's been done before. In a very smaller period of time, not even trial in the real world example for that matter. I mean, even just talking about the trial, but going larger than that, as we talked about with swine flu, 53 unconfirmed deaths on Vayer's and or unconfirmed deaths of reports just like they're on Vayer's, and that stopped the whole program. We have over 6,000 reported deaths on Vayer's unconfirmed. Of course, ask why that's unconfirmed. Who was supposed to be confirming these? Oh, that's right, the CDC. Unconfirmed doesn't mean they've been debunked. It means they haven't yet to confirm them. The only 400 cases they claim of child deaths in regard to COVID-19, even the mainstream media called them out for not confirming that those were actually caused by COVID-19. They still cite that number. This is what we're dealing with today. Now, I'm going to go over two points that largely pointed out by the Children's Health Defense, by the defender. Some excellent points showing you how this is a very sneaky, very sinister sidestep of liability. In fact, possibly the entire reason why they played it the way they did in regard to this latest step with the approval while sort of allowing the emergency authorization for certain categories and different groupings of material that have already been labeled emergency use authorization. For those that are confused about that topic, watch the show I did yesterday. I have the link in the show notes, which I'll add afterward, because even today, there's a lot of independent media that are still misrepresenting the situation, still claiming, no, they only emergency authorized this and not that, or no, it was they approved this company and had nothing to do with the injection. These things are all false. The approval doesn't make it any less safe, or excuse me, any more safe or any more valid. The FDA has approved a whole, but I mean, I could do an entire show about the drugs they've approved that have turned out to be very dangerous. And you can even show then that they knew they were dangerous and did it anyway, right? This is a long history, but we're going to go through these quick points today, as well as the fact that the meeting that they refused to do for COVID-19 injections, the FDA's meeting they promised to do earlier on, the committee they were going to put together. And then they said, nah, we don't need to because there's nothing worrisome here. Of course, we'll just not do the meeting that we always do. We promise we would. Well, guess what? They're not going to do it for COVID. But the moment that they did this, the approval, now they go, oh, well, now we're going to do a meeting for influenza stuff. Very telling. So let's get right into it and start in the wrong location, as I just love to do. But this is the clip that I played there on Brighteon. This is just a clip of the larger thing, but you can watch it for yourself. I just thought this was a really telling clip to start with, because what he's discussing there is the new future, the fourth industrial revolution, the great reset, the build back better concept, all of this coming from the World Economic Forum. Him, this is Klaus Schwab's little kid. This is, you know, his little outfit that he's running, right? This is exactly what is happening, except today you're not allowed to say it like this, right? The gene therapy discussion, the genetic editing, which is what this is, okay? And this is what they openly talked about. It. You can look at Tal Zaks and different people from Moderna or Pfizer talking about this technology before COVID Clown World came around, and they will call it gene therapy. They will call it exactly what it is. That's now fake news today. The point is that this is where this is all going. This is what these mRNA platforms are all about. And this is what they are trying to create. And so when you point back and you show that this is what he's saying, this is going to change you, who you are, that should concern you a little bit. So let me play a little bit more of that clip real quick, and then we'll continue going forward. I want to play a little bit past what I played in the opening there. Oh, I just forgot something. I forgot that the download that I had removed the audio. It doesn't matter. The point, let me just play the opening clip then again real quick for those that haven't, just, I mean, since I just started, but I said I'd play it, so let's play it again.
The difference of this forced industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you. If you take a genetic editing, right, just as an example, it's you.
And these are all things that they're doing now. Right. This was the plan. This is where, and back then when they were pointing to genetic editing and the stuff they're talking about, that was pointing at stuff that they're doing now. Except now when they look at stuff they're doing now and say, no, that's not genetic editing, doesn't make any sense, does it? But to get back into the larger discussion, to make this not a long show, I want to make sure we start off with a couple of quick points about the Afghanistan situation, as I have been doing lately, just because it's very relevant. You might be interested to find out that the U.S. military forces, they're forcing German reporters and 10 other international journalists to board planes under a threat of military police to depart from Kabul airport. And it says deputy editor-in-chief, Germany's largest magazine, is now calling out the U.S. government for attacks on press freedom, because that's exactly what it was. You can't say that we're doing it for your safety if they're there in a dangerous situation, because that is their job, to cover the dangerous situation, to point out what's really happening. But see, this is what they're trying to stop you from seeing, which is the point. Before the incident, the U.S. military consulted with the U.S. State Department on whether journalists could still leave Kabul airport at their own risk. But the U.S. government apparently fears critical press and witnesses. Exactly. This is what they're saying. They're calling them out for hiding what's going on. And as I said, can't have conflicting reports from the ground, now can we? It's just silly how dishonest these people are. And some people are able to point it out. Some people are able to go, look at that dishonest government and their foreign policy. But those same people will come over and look at the injection and go, no, you're a conspiracy theorist. We should trust the government. That doesn't make any sense to me, but somehow it's happening. Now forward, that was the same tweets. I wanted to point out that Taylor Hudak was just censored on Twitter for pointing out something that an expert just said. I mean, this is the crazy reality of where we are right now. She was censored for quoting Dr. Bhakti, a highly credentialed expert, on his personal perspective of the very obvious injection issues taking place. We all see that. Even the mainstream is now grudgingly going, well, yeah, this is only about 50% effective. And, you know, all these people are being hurt by this, breakthrough cases, hospitalizations through the roof in Israel, Iceland, Gibraltar, Malta, right? All these places. But he comes in and says, as she quoted, of course, you want to see why they didn't like it, because he's very specific about it. Quote, this vaccination is killing people. By the way, that's a 100% factual statement. If there's two people that were killed by this, to say it's killing people is an accurate statement. You see how ridiculous it is to pretend that that's hyperbolic? If it's killing people and people have died, that's a fair statement. The same reason I make the point of saying this vaccine is dangerous, all that means is it's able to cause harm. But you see, they don't like that because it's clearly able to cause harm. They've admitted myocarditis. They've admitted anaphylactic shock. They've admitted Bell's palsy. They've admitted strokes and every pericarditis and every other thing I could list off that they've proven have happened to a super rare and uncommon point. Right? But it's happening. So when he says it can killing people, that's true. We can see that. They've proven that. People have died from strokes. But obviously we know it's much, much more than that that's being hidden. But this, she quotes him and says Dr. Bhakti, with a wave of vaccination comes a wave of death. This is backed up by the statistics. This is an expert's opinion regardless, guys. It doesn't matter whether you agree with him. He is an expert who has the right to speak on these things. But we're in a world today where they're not allowed to be experts if they don't say the right thing. How do we not see what that shows us? That means it doesn't matter whether you're credentialed or not. As long as you go along to get along, you're now an expert, right? In the minds of the people here. I mean, we've seen examples of people that are adamantly a pro-vaccine, constantly speaking out about these things all. And suddenly this comes around, they stand up and go, wait a minute, this looks a little concerning. Now you're suddenly anti-vax. You have a lifetime of promoting and protecting these things. There's been a lot of examples like that. Or people, let's say, that got two shots and are now being told they're anti-vax because they don't get the third, right? This is off the rails, and we all see that. Taylor's doing an excellent job covering the facts. By the way, she has a great interview coming very soon with Catherine Austin Fitz and somebody else that'll be out for T-Lab soon. But she's being censored for this, and this should bother you. Now, I hope you will watch the recent show we just did, The Unjustified, Dishonest, and Dangerous FDA Approval of Pfizer's Injection. I went through a lot of important stuff in this, a lot. But that's the preface for what we're going to talk about today. So that being stated, make sure you watch this if you want the full picture on how it was approved and how there's a lot of manipulations taking place here. Oh, and on that note, by the way, take note that there's been a lot of improvements on Super U lately. Okay, here's the new embed that looks a lot better. Okay, there was a little bit of weirdness at some stuff that happened yesterday, but it looks like we're smooth sailing here today. And I want to point out to you, since we're talking about it, let me just jump over here real quick and show you a fantastic new feature that some of you have already discovered, and that is recurring tips. You can now jump over here like you know, like basically the only thing that Patreon is, right? So the entire platform of Patreon is circumvented by this one thing on our one this one spot on Super U. I just think that's funny. But the point is that you can come in here and do recurring tips and donate up to $9,999 a month if you want to, or as little as $2 a month. Or you can do a single tip for $2 or up to $9,999. Somebody, by the way, out there, I don't know if they would like to say, already gave me a pretty nice high-level donation through Super U, and it's fantastic because this is legitimate. You know, it's not going to be manipulated by YouTube. Anyway, recurring tips is a huge step in the right direction. So you can now come over here and do recurring tips to me, to anybody else on this platform. Oh, and the other great note that I wanted to share with you, guess who just joined Super U? Whitney Webb. So she's now going to be putting out, I think it's going to be starting with some of her podcasts, but eventually going to be starting to put out some more content on her own personal channel. Not even necessarily like T-Lab. It's going to be, this is the T-Lab channel. Our interviews will end up on this channel. This is probably going to be Whitney and an Unlimited Hangout on her, and maybe I'll join on that channel as well. Regardless, I'm excited that she's on here because she is doing an outstanding job. Even through all the stuff that she's been dealing with, she's still knocking it out of the park. So rock and roll, Super U is where you should be. Now let's keep going. This is a great point that Robert Malone just made today. This is fascinating, he says. There is a VRBPAC meeting scheduled now. That is an acronym for Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee. You know, that committee that they were supposed to have in regard to the approval of the COVID-19 injection. The meeting that they promised they would have and then walked back on, because there's no concerning things to be concerned about, right? There's no reason to think that there's a problem. Yeah, you mean those unverified VAERS reports? Nah, there's nothing that shows there's a possible problem, except that half the country's screaming about how there's problems. Obviously, there's some very dishonest things happening here. If this was a meeting that should only happen if and when there's a problem, maybe. But this is a meeting they already promised they would do regardless, and a meeting that they always, always do, and they didn't do it in this period of time, in all periods of time you would talk about. Like one of the most contentious discussions around the most contentious injections of all time, and they just don't do the meeting that's supposed to make sure that that's safe. I mean, come on. It's almost like they want to create this division. That could be the case. But he says, there is a VRBAPV, I have trouble saying this acronym for some reason, VRBPAC meeting scheduled now, but only for influenza vax and a review of what's going on in the Fed lab. Nothing involving COVID. The FDA letter stated that COVID vax licensure was not controversial, and so they weren't going to do this meeting, which is what I just said. And this should really upset you, here's to his point. Thanks for pointing this out, Dr. Malone. It's great that you're on top of this, because I don't think people are paying attention to this stuff, right? I mean, where would I have seen this elsewhere if he hadn't shared it? We're not being told about this stuff. The media is not telling you about this stuff. This is quiet circles and closed room doors that the media pretends they're holding accountable, but they're part of that circle. Right. So if it wasn't for Robert Malone saying, look at this and what they're doing, most of us probably wouldn't have seen it. Like, take a note from what that's showing you, that we are not being informed here. It's the only thing, the only way we have this network of information flowing is because of the avenues we've created amongst ourselves. And they are desperately trying to stop that. This is from yesterday. Summary. HHS and the FDA. It says the FDA announces a forthcoming public advisory committee meeting of the Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee. The general function of the committee is to provide advice and recommendations to FDA and regulatory issues. Members will participate via teleconference. At least one portion of the meeting will be closed to the public. FDA has established a docket for public comment on this docket. So not only is it going to be not in person, and some of it's private, but it's not about the thing that we're all concerned about. Now remember, as we continue to go through this, let me see if this just pops up. Let's see. That would looks like I should have grabbed this. I wasn't planning on bringing it up, but I think this is the right one. Taking too long to load. No, this is an older one. But funny enough, it's also Peter Doshi, I'm pretty sure. He's just been knocking these out of the park and calling people out for this stuff. Regardless, here, let me do this. I want to include this for you, because the point is that Peter Doshi from the British Medical Journal, the senior editor of one of the most respected scientific publications on the planet has been calling this out from the beginning. I'm just going to run back to the show from yesterday, grab the link. And he's been calling out that this meeting should have happened. And I think it's an important link to include. Just even though I've included this link in general, I want to include these ones for you, both of them, in fact, because it's really important to see the flow of information. I'm not going to go over them again today. I just want to include them for you guys to look. This is the one he put out on August 20th, that they're set to do this, even though he goes very clearly through the reality that they're not, they shouldn't be. They're not doing the right job. They're hiding things. Now, here is on August 23rd, where he reiterates the point that the committee, So he's talking about it right here. That they say they won't do the meeting to discuss the data ahead of its approval. To address, this is despite them saying they would do it before. And the reality is that he's making it very clear in this information that this is not only unprecedented, but this is a complete, this is going back on what they promised you they would do. And this, he's calling them out before they actually did this. Anyway, I wouldn't go through it. I won't. That's what I want you to check out. Now, going back to the point, it's saying the meeting will be held on September 30th. September 30th. So you're telling me that we couldn't have, you know, included this in the conversation and, God forbid, waited until September 30th to have an open discussion about the concerns of COVID injections? Because what changes exactly? This is Peter Doshi's exact point. Who doesn't have access to these right now? Right. In fact, to be quite honest, under the illusion of the emergency authorization, 12 and up have the availability to get these things. Under the approval, which is discernible, same thing, it seems, is only 16 and up. So realistically, you lessened the amount. Right. But so the point is that what's the rush? Do it now because of the cases. OK, what's the rush then? Everyone already has access to it. The rush is to force people to do it that haven't wanted to. That's all it's really about. So that's why they're keeping the meeting back too, because people would have been concerned, because they go, well, that's plenty of reason to be concerned about putting this out. And there's plenty of scientists, including Peter Doshi himself, the senior editor of the British Medical Journal, who are saying exactly that we should pull back, wait, finish the 2 years of studies that they're currently in the middle of, which is the reality, which the Twitter sphere refuses to accept. And that even he'll point out. And then make this decision, you know, after the normal process and not an expedited, truncated, rushed version that doesn't do the proper things and pretends it's all good because we had years before when we weren't doing the same thing. It says, please note that due to the, and to make that more clear, the bottom line is, so people that don't know that point, I brushed it too quickly there. They've been working on mRNA injections for a long time. And it's been really bad for a long time, hurting people, dengue fever, plenty of examples we've already talked about. Now, that doesn't change once you then make this version of it and then begin to safety test that version. You could have been working on this for the last 500 years. It doesn't change the fact that you need to then do 2 years of safety tests to ensure that it's safe because it's a new product. See, but people keep weirdly arguing that, well, we've been working on this for 8 years, so that means you just do 2 months of safety trials? That doesn't make sense, you see, but people don't care about sense right now. All the people screaming about common sense don't seem to care about common sense. The reality is it was skipped. It was rushed. That's why they didn't do animal trials until after it was already being put in people's arms. And that's because you would have seen the antibody-dependent enhancement they talked about many times. Now, it says the meeting will be held on September 30th. It says, please note, due to the impact of COVID-19 pandemic, all meeting participants will be joining this advisory committee meeting via online teleconferencing platform. Now, I might as well play this since I haven't played this in a while, because it's exactly what I was just talking about. This is an important clip discussing exactly that about the previous injections. And remember, the only difference here was that they increased the lipid nanoparticles to make sure that the instructions would reach the location, I believe, if I remember that correctly. But the point is that was the breakthrough, right? The increase of the lipid specifically the lipid nanoparticles themselves were the breakthrough, which allowed this to happen. But the problem is they found that the higher levels created high levels of adverse events. Seemingly, we never got past that problem. I guess we just stopped caring about it. Because here's what happened before, and I think we can see it happening now.
Government's been trying for almost 30 years to develop a coronavirus vaccine, and it's been unsuccessful. And beginning in 2002, there were 3 outbreaks of coronavirus, we call them SARS, at that point in MERS. The first SARS was a natural illness, jumped from a bat to human beings. The second two were lab-created, that escaped, and infected human beings. And so the governments of China and a consortium of Western governments all got together and put millions and millions of dollars into an effort to develop a coronavirus vaccine. And between 2002 and 2014, they worked very hard to do that. And what happened is they developed about 35 vaccines, and four of them were really promising. They chose the four most promising, and they gave them to ferrets, which is the animal that is most analogous to human beings when it comes to upper lung respiratory infections. The ferrets had a brilliant, robust, and durable antibody response. But then something horrible happened. And those ferrets were challenged when they were exposed to the wild virus. They got horribly sick. They got inflammation throughout their bodies, and they died. Wow. And the scientists remembered that something very similar had happened in the 1960s, where they had developed a vaccine for RSV, which is very similar to coronavirus. It's an upper respiratory infection ailment. They had skipped the animals and given them directly to 35 children. And the children, again, had developed a very robust antibody response. But when those children were exposed to the wild virus, they got very, very sick, much sicker than unvaccinated children. Two of those kids had died. It was a scandal. And they realized when the same thing happened with the ferrets, that there was something that they called enhanced immune response. It's also called pathogenic priming. And what it means is that when you get the vaccine, it appears that you have an antibody response, but when you actually encounter the wild virus, you become much sicker. And it actually creates a pathway that virus hurts you a lot more than with unvaccinated people. So this was 2012.
Very, very telling. Right. I mean, what's interesting is that we talked about molecular mimicry, antibody dependent enhancement. We've talked about pathogenic priming. You know, as I understand it, I actually talked about this with James Lyons Weiler, PhD, but there's differences between them, obviously, but they all have, it seems like we're watching that happen right now in a lot of different ways. Specifically, antibody dependent enhancement has been shown about five different ways from five different peer reviewed studies since COVID-19 to be an obvious reality. Dr. Fauci pointed that out before this started back in 2020, that's a real problem. I showed you the research from yesterday from 2009, peer-reviewed study, showing that coronaviruses played a huge role in regard to antibody-dependent enhancement, and that's an obvious issue that we need to watch out for, right? And now here we are. And I showed you the one from December 2020 that said clearly there's a specific and significant risk of antibody-dependent enhancement with these injections, and they need to be informed about this, otherwise we're not meeting informed consent. And guess what happened? Nothing. Right. And that was peer reviewed on March 2021. Nothing has happened. Right. This is an obvious reality. And yet here we are with them skipping this meeting because they decided to, because clearly there's no problems that we can see. Now, it goes on here to say also on September 30th under topic 2, they'll meet an open session to discuss and make recommendations for the selections of strains to be included in the influenza virus vaccines for 2021, 2022 Southern Hemisphere. Right. So, again, this is when they get together and guess. They guess based on samples and you know, estimations, you know, the influenza experts that drive all the solution that we're dealing with now, right? And the WHO has called out routinely before, that the BMJ and the HHS have called out before, right? The seasonal influenza experts that drive based on their own policy. This is what they've been called out for. This is a industry, guys. And even the WHO has pointed to this and said, this is a problem and nothing has changed. So my point is, they're getting together to recommend the different strains we're going to be used to make these injections, and how much you want to bet we're going to be pumping these into mRNA platform type things as sooner than later. This has not been proven to be safe. The mRNA, the spike protein in this specific case in regard to COVID-19, or the nanoparticles themselves, all individually can create issues in your body and have been proven to do so in certain circumstances. More often than not, as far as I can tell. But let's just skip over all that and focus on what we're going to do for the vaccine profit industry. Now it says FDA intends to make background material available to the public no later than 2 business days before the meeting. Oh, great. So they're going to make sure they get us all this information. What about the COVID-19 ones, right? Nobody seems to, the flu vaccine, as much as there's a lot of issues that we could point there, that there's a lot of fraudulent activity and lies and manipulations. Everybody's concerned about the most contentious one that's ever been discussed, which is currently the COVID-19 injection. And all they're going to do is go, nah, we don't need that, but we're going to make sure we get you 2 days before this one. We're getting all the information right in front of you. The FDA if it's unable to post the background material, it says, on its website prior to the meeting, well, the background material will be made available publicly to the FDA's website. Totally making sure they're going through all the hoops and we got all the data for you. Right. Because everyone cares about the next influenza strains, right? This is ridiculous. And this is them showing, trying to look like they're doing all their due diligence. Why did they skip the COVID-19 one that everybody cares about? This is what should have been done for that. 2 days before the business meeting, giving us all the data so we can look at it, do our due diligence, have questions ready, ask them what we want to care about. Nope, they don't care. They decided for you that you're not in risk, despite all of the obvious issues that we all care about. Thank you, Malone, for pointing this out. I couldn't believe how ridiculous this is. Now, jumping over to the next part. This, in my opinion, is the most important part. Now, this is an extension of what I was saying yesterday. And this is what I love about the way the independent media should be, you know, and I shouldn't say is working today, but the reason I was going to say should is because a lot of people out there I don't feel are really trying to utilize this. But, you know, that we work together and we feed off each other's in research and growing information, like eventually see independent media as kind of like just one nebulous thing fighting back against the same thing on the other side, right? The mainstream media. But the problem is a lot of people in there don't really have the same mindset, that it's more about individual success than it is about the truth. But in this case, I love that I saw this discussion. It's with an article with from RFK Jr. and Merrill Nass, MD. And they point something out that like adds to exactly what I was saying yesterday. And this was like an epiphany. I was like, yes, exactly. This is exactly what makes sense to me now. And this is super important in regard to how it seems they're using what I was describing yesterday to sidestep liability. And you'll see what I mean by that, because yes, you're thinking, well, wait a minute, didn't we just discuss yesterday that they're still have indemnity? Now this is, they do, right? But here is where I still missed a larger part of it. This is my point. And this is what they found here, or rather just logically figured out. There is still indemnity, but it only applies to those currently still under emergency authorization. Now, again, to go back to this point, the discussion yesterday was that bottom line, there are three categories of this now, this new section, right? They've now approved this specific Pfizer injection for 16 and older, right? Then there's the 12 to 15 that is currently emergency authorized. Then they've got a whole body of currently distributed injections that have already been labeled with emergency use authorization. So the point is that anything that's currently labeled as Comirnaty means that that has been one that they're labeled as approved. Now that, according to RFK Jr., that means that you can sue them if you have a problem, because that's an approved injection that's still, then that's subject to all the certain laws that entails. But if the injection says EUA on it, or Pfizer, BioNTech, that means that it's still under EUA and they're using that one, which means, guess what? They're still not liable for any problems. So there's a reason that it seems that they're sidestepping using the ones that are currently, are the ones that are now approved and still trying to use the ones that are emergency authorized. Now, it can be confusing for a lot of people, but the point is that they're still using this for the categories where they're below or the ones that still are left in the supply. And based on what they're saying here, what I agree, I think that was a very carefully coordinated choice. Now, the article says two things mainstream media didn't tell you about the FDA's approval of the Pfizer injection. Now, as it says, there are several bizarre aspects to the FDA approval that will prove confusing to those not familiar with the pervasiveness of the FDA's regulatory capture or the depths of the agency's cynicism. And again, even just how I just described, that's probably confusing for those that haven't watched it. That's why I'm stressing that you should go through this and watch my explanation of why this is approved, but it's just a little bit more confusing, and I think intentionally so, about how they divvied this up. Now, he does a good job in breaking quickly down here as well. It says, first, the FDA acknowledges that while Pfizer has insufficient stocks of the newly licensed Comirnaty vaccine available, which I don't know why that would even be possible or make sense. Again, that's my point, is I think this is a carefully crafted excuse to be able to push you into using the emergency authorized ones, even though they've got approved sitting on the shelves. So then if you do get hurt from it, they can still go, oh, well, that's the emergency one. We still have indemnity. But it says there's a significant amount, quote, of the Pfizer BioNTech COVID vaccine produced under emergency use authorization, still available for use. But remember, that doesn't mean anything because it's the same product. Nothing has changed. No new studies have been done. This is the same concept. And all they're saying is over here, this is emergency authorized and it's safe and effective. This one's approved and it's safe and effective. So what's the difference? Good question. Right, this is all a big shell game of pushing this down your arm. It says the FDA decrees that the Pfizer BioNTech vaccine under the EUA should remain unlicensed, but can be interchangeably used with newly licensed Comirnaty product, which doesn't make any sense. If it's interchangeable, then there's no difference. And this is all just about perception. But it says, second, the FDA pointed out that the licensed Pfizer Comirnaty vaccine and the existing emergency use authorized Pfizer vaccine, same thing, remember, just they're called Pfizer, they're calling it because it's, you don't technically call it Comirnaty until it's technically approved, right? So I know this is meant to be confusing. So those two things are, quote, legally distinct. That's their own term, but proclaims their differences do not impact safety or effectiveness. Right. So when you really, if you really press them on it, they will tell you on either side of it that they're both safe and effective. Yet they will also argue that they're distinct and different, but it doesn't impact the safety. But if you really press them and ask what changed, they won't be able to produce that because nothing has changed. I just think this is one of the most hilarious aspects of how obviously manipulative all this is. But it's legally distinct, and that's important. It says there is a huge real-world difference between products approved under emergency use authorization compared with those FDA is fully licensed or approved. Now, it says the emergency use authorization are experimental under U.S. law, right? That's important. That's always been the case. Despite all, again, the Twitter sycophants out there screaming that that's fake news because I was told by Fox or CNN. You can look it up. I showed you on the FDA website that unapproved products are literally thereby not shown to be safe. I mean, but the emergency use authorized products are experimental or investigational was the way they tried to sidestep that. They're synonymous, even on their own definitions on their website. But it says both the Nuremberg Code and federal regulations provide that no one can force a human being to participate in this experiment under 21 U.S. Code Section 360BB3E and on. Quote, authorization for medical products for use in emergencies. It is unlawful to deny someone a job or an education because they refuse to be an experimental subject. Instead, potential recipients have an absolute right to refuse emergency use authorization vaccines. Right? So you have the, and we've been saying this from the beginning. Now, by the way, this article goes into a point where they are sort of arguing that you, that it's, that they have a legal pathway for forcing it if it is approved. I disagree with that. I think this comes down to a fundamental constitutional right or a human right, whether we're talking international law, the UNESCO discussion, you know, not with no disadvantage or prejudice. We've talked about this, where that's the international law from the UN that makes it clear that the US is a part of. They can't force this on you. And if they try to, you cannot say, well, you have to be, you know, you can't work or you don't get to get on the bus if you don't. That's disadvantage or prejudice. But even in US law, coming down to like just specifically to the Constitution, right? Constitutional rights shall not be infringed, inalienable rights that we talk about. You cannot force a medical intervention on somebody. I don't care what your argument is that it's best for society. Remember, that's also in the UNESCO document. The rights of you, your body are more important than that of society or science. That's what the United Nations document says. So we have to remember that even if it's, regardless of whether it's approved, it doesn't change the fact that it's not legal, justified, moral. It's not right to force it on anybody. They're doing it anyway. And remember the beginning where the whole thing was like, they'll never force us on anybody. Wasn't it funny how now they're going explaining why it makes sense to do it? The same people that said it would never happen and called you a conspiracy theorist for saying they would force it on you are now going, you're crazy for not doing it. It's ridiculous how every time this happens. Now, the emergency use authorization approved COVID vaccines have that's frustrating. Even that they would say that irritates me. There's no such thing as emergency use authorized approved. It is emergency use authorized COVID vaccines. Now, look, I seem to be the only one being nitpicky about this. And even people in independent media, guys, if you think I'm wrong, do your due diligence and look this up. There is no different. There is emergency authorized. I know I do this all the time. It drives me crazy that people have just kind of gotten comfortable with just saying, well, whatever. They're different. And the fact that they're conflating them actually adds to the point that they're making in this article. It conflates the idea and then people get confused about it. It's not very different. The emergency authorized COVID vaccines have an extraordinary liability shield under the 2005 Public Readiness and Preparedness Act. Vaccine manufacturers, distributors, providers, and government planners are immune from liability. The only way an injured party can sue is if he or she can prove willful misconduct and if the U.S. government has also brought an enforcement action against the party or willful misconduct. No such lawsuits have ever succeeded. Let that sink in. Even though there's been a lot of attempts, like it's impossible to make that happen. The government, and then it goes on to say, at least for the moment, the Pfizer Comirnaty vaccine has no liability shield. Vials of the branded product, which literally say Comirnaty on the label now, which be the ones that are technically approved, are subject to the same product liability laws as other U.S. products. Meaning if you take this thing and you have a stroke or all of a sudden have, you know, all, you know, half of your body goes numb and you never comes back, or you have anaphylactic shock, or you have myocarditis, which all of which we've seen verified, by the way. And I'm not talking about Bayer's reports. These are ones that have been proven to have happened, hospital verified. We've talked about all of these examples. Then you can sue them and probably win based on the body of evidence that's clearly out there. See, and I think, that this is where they kind of honed in on the point that really light bulb, you know, is like that. There it is. This is why they're doing this, at least partly. There's probably many reasons, but it says, but licensed adult vaccines. So approved, including the one that says Comirnaty now, do not enjoy any liability shield. Hold on. It looks like they wrote this incorrectly. At least for a moment, the Pfizer Comirnaty vaccine has no liability shield. Right. Oh, okay. Right. So, and then it says, okay, including this one, do not enjoy the liability. Okay. I was just confused myself. Excuse me. So the same point that they still, the emergency authorized ones have the indemnity. So the point is that any licensed, approved, including this Comirnaty, do not have that. You can sue them if there's a problem. It says, just as with Ford's exploding Pinto or Monsanto's herbicide Roundup, people injured by the Comirnaty vaccine could potentially sue for damages. Doesn't mean you win with the broken system we have, but you can sue. Now it says, and because adults injured by the vaccine will be able to show that the manufacturer knew of the problems with the product, which we can clearly do, jury awards could be astronomical. We could be talking class action lawsuits. It could go viral crazy. Now it says, Pfizer is therefore unlikely to allow any American to take the new Comirnaty vaccine until it can somehow arrange immunity for the product. Now remember, we're not talking about two different things here. This is the same Pfizer biotech injection. The only difference is the ones that they've approved it going forward. Now they're pumping them out of the factory with a new label that says Comirnaty. That's the only difference. So the point is, if you use one that says Comirnaty, their point is that you have the right to sue them if something goes wrong. So their point is that they're going out of their way, most likely, to make sure that that does not get to you, that they'll keep that on the shelf to pretend like it's all approved and keep pumping out the emergency authorization under the idea that this is what we have to get rid of first. This feels incredibly sinister and intentionally deceptive to me. Now it says, given this background, the FDA's acknowledgement in its approval letter that there are insufficient stocks of the licensed Comirnaty, which I don't, again, why does that even make sense? We've been doing right now they could keep pumping this stuff out. I mean, even more so, why don't they just change the, I don't want to assume, I guarantee that's probably some kind of a legal issue. The point is they could be pumping this out nonstop right now. And since it seems to be pretty stagnant at 50%, I don't know why they think there's this huge rush to make this happen. See, there's all the reality on the ground always seems to contrast what they're trying to hyperbolically and fearmonger in front of you. Like, oh my God, we don't have enough because no one, this is going up 0.1% in general, like every other day in regard to the 52.1% of the country has been vaccinated and so on. It's not this huge rush that they're trying to make it out to be. So the point is, this is the illusion they're giving you. Well, we don't have enough. Remember in the beginning when they said that there wasn't enough or there was, you know, so much demand and we're running out, and then Pfizer and Moderna spoke up and were like, that's not true. We've got a whole bunch in our office right now. I showed you on my show. Biden's over here saying we don't have enough. And they're going, yeah, we do. It's right here. You need to ask for more. It was an illusion to make it seem like it wasn't available when really people were resistant to it. Same thing here, in my opinion. But it says, but an abundant supply of the emergency authorized version exposes this approval as a cynical scheme to encourage businesses and schools to impose illegal jab mandates. Right. Because if they're going to mandate this, then they're still injecting the emergency authorized one. You can see how there's a legal gray area there. I mean, a straight up criminal activity, as far as I'm concerned. That's crazy to me. They are literally using the one that is emergency authorized, knowing that that they have indemnity, even though they're forcing it into people's arms under the illusion that, look, it's approved, so now we can do it. This is going to be completely overshadowed and missed by most everybody. Thank God we have people like the Defender here pointing this out. Like, you know, maybe Tucker might cover this in a couple of weeks, right? As some breaking news. But other than that, I doubt we're going to see anybody talk about this. Now it says the FDA's clear motivation is to enable Pfizer to quickly unload inventories of a vaccine that science and the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, VAERS, have exposed as unreasonably dangerous and that the Delta variant has rendered obsolete, which is the other point. Right. I mean, look, even right now, even Forbes, of course, right after the approval, God forbid we should say this before the approval and influence whether it happens. But now we're willing to admit it. Right. One day afterward. Oh, guess what? The CDC comes out and goes, oh, I guess it is not working. Right. We see every day. No, it's completely safe and effective. And we're safe and effective against the Delta variant, and the Delta variant will say, and then, oh, the next day. Oh, now it's down. Too bad. We just approved it. Now it dropped all the way down. Yeah, this is ridiculous. Israel, Gibraltar, Malta, all the ones, Iceland, we keep telling you about, they've been pointing to this for months. And guess what? The CDC was just exposed for knowing this months ago and not telling you. We've already covered all this. So now when they quietly let Forbes talk about it, quoting what the CDC said one day after the approval that you didn't get to be involved in because they didn't hold the committee meeting they promised they would, now they're admitting it's down to 66%, which, by the way, it's way lower than that. So if you're at a point where you're barely 50-50, whether it works, and you're talking about forcing this on somebody, even though it's emergency authorized supply that they still have indemnity for, there's obviously deception happening here. Why would you take something? And this is in regard to this is the point that they're saying. Oh, dang it. Oh, good. Okay. I thought I hit the link. They're saying the Delta variant has rendered it obsolete. I mean, Israel continues to point this out. Like, they were screaming about this. It does not work. And I even just saw the last, I think it was, maybe it was Forbes as well, but they're pointing out that this puts this down to zero. Like, if you have people that are spreading this the same viral level, just as easily catching, spreading the same thing, which is all the data is showing us, that means this is ineffective. It is zero. They're not willing to admit that, but the mainstream media is even picking up on it at this point. But we're all crazy conspiracy theorists because we keep pointing to peer-reviewed science, right? Funny how weird this is right now. You know, there's probably people all over the place go, oh, so crazy. That guy is peer-reviewed science. Didn't you hear what CNN said? You stupid. It says Americans told that the Pfizer COVID vaccine is now licensed will understandably assume COVID vaccine mandates are lawful, which, by the way, I disagree with that. That's the point I was saying earlier. I don't believe mandates of any medical intervention are lawful. I think there's an obvious circumvention of your bodily autonomy, your constitutional rights, period. There's no, just because Congress made a law at some point that when it was passed, whether they all agree with it or not, that is repugnant to the Constitution, that makes it null and void. The ruling of Mayberry something, I always forget the secondary name. Somebody please cite it for me in the chat if you remember. This is a ruling, I believe it was the last decade of the 1800s. They ruled that anything that is repugnant to the Constitution is null and void, because that's the point. That's the whole point of what judges today have lost sight of. Their only job is to uphold the Constitution. The point is that so far we've had a lot of laws since then that have been passed that are directly repugnant to the Constitution, such as with all the stuff happening today. The point is that these people, whether they're in politicians, Congress, whatever, it doesn't matter if they decide to do something if it violates your inalienable shall not be infringed rights. They can still do it, you understand? Everyone can get together and vote and make it look all official, but we know back here, because we've seen the Constitution that shall not be infringed, and we can see that it's challenging that they are illegal, that they are off the path. Now, what do you do about that? That's another conversation. But we need to understand that they can't just make laws that go against your constitutional rights. They simply cannot. That's the point of shall not be infringed. But you see, the problem today is that these same people are now pointing at the very idea of freedom as somehow some kind of childish thing that we're just getting in the way with. Oh, you and your freedoms. Like, freedom. Like, that's literally what I'm seeing. People pointing at the Republicans and saying, oh, you guys and your constitutional rights. It's like, how ignorant must you be? Like, these are the very same people that would be screaming about those rights if it was something they cared about. It's just insulting. But it goes on to say, but only emergency use authorization vaccines for which no one has any real liability will be available during the next few weeks when these schools mandate these injections. The point is that whether you think it's lawful or not, they're still going to be injecting people with the emergency authorized labeled injections, which means they're not going to be held accountable. The FDA appears to be purposefully tricking American citizens into giving up their right to refuse an experimental product. With the media, while the media has trumpeted that the FDA has approved COVID injections, the FDA has not approved the Pfizer biotech vaccines, nor any COVID vaccines for the 12 to 15 age group, nor any booster doses for anyone. Yet they're still going to be giving people these boosters. And because they say it's approved, they're going to go around pretending like you should be forced to take a booster. But that is not approved. This is just an obvious manipulation. The FDA has not licensed any Moderna injection nor Johnson & Johnson. So right now, the point is the vast majority, right this moment, if not all, of the vaccines available in the U.S. remain unlicensed emergency use authorization products. So basically, the approval was just a big show. Even though they're not going to let you use that, they're going to keep pushing this stuff down people's throats because they know that they have indemnity. If it says right now, Pfizer Biotech, on that vial, which you should demand to see, it is an experimental product under 21 U.S. Code 360BBB, and you have the right to refuse it. And by the way, my point is you have the right to refuse any of this stuff, but their point is saying if it comes from Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, you have the right to refuse it, right? And as well, if it comes in, it says Comirnaty, Or I for some reason skipped that. It says, here's what you need to know when somebody orders you to get the injection. Ask to see the vial. Demand. And if they don't show it to you, walk away. By the way, you shouldn't be in there to begin with, by the way. But as always, it's your choice. If you somehow decide this is the right thing for you, demand to see the vial. I just plead with you to not even go near it. But it says, if it says Comirnaty, that's the point. That's the one that's now approved. But you won't see that because they're using all these right now. That's the idea. Now it says the FDA is playing bait and switch with the American public, but we don't have to play along. If it doesn't say Comirnaty, you have not been offered an approved injection. It just really gets under my skin how plainly dishonest all this is on its face. And to add to that, another article from the Defender, CDC recommended pregnant women get COVID vaccine based on unreviewed study, unverifiable data. Now we've been poking at this topic for a while and showing you that there's obvious reasons to be concerned, including the show we just covered from yesterday, where I talk about specifically the one with the rats and the reduced by almost 10% of reproductivity that they don't tell you about in their own study. I showed it to you. Now, it says the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommendation that pregnant women be vaccinated for COVID was based on a yet-to-be peer-reviewed paper. Don't let that irony overwhelm you. Like, oh, that's a preprint. That's not peer-reviewed. And they'll just disregard everything we point to. But here we are using that entire concept to float the idea that pregnant women should be injected with this thing. And it was on data from the government-run V-Safe system that, guess what? The public can't have access to, therefore verify. This just gets more ridiculous by the day. And it gets worse, by the way. None of the three manufacturers of the COVID vaccines being administered in the U.S., Pfizer, Moderna, or J&J, completed clinical trials on pregnant women as part of their emergency use authorization applications for the FDA. Just let that sink in right out of the gate. I've told you that already. Didn't do it. But we were telling you could take it now, right? Because if you did these rapid, quick ones in the middle of this process, even though people were already being injected with this from the beginning, pregnant women. Now it says it in its application to the FDA for approval, which was granted Monday, Pfizer said its available data on its vaccine was insufficient to inform vaccine associated risk in pregnancy. We just read that to you. That's on the approval document, the approval, not even the emergency authorization, which is even worse. This is the approval document. And it clearly states the information they have is insufficient to inform vaccine associated risks. How is that possible? How is it possible they can say that and then they can say, but get it though? I mean, that's just unbelievable, especially since most people, including pregnant women, 50 and under, are completely not at risk. Even higher, even over that, if you've got no comorbidities, Oxford calculator puts 19, one in a million. Now it says, yet the CDC nevertheless recommends pregnant women get the injection, a recommendation the agency reaffirmed on August 11th based on, guess what, the yet-to-be peer-reviewed research paper. Recipient of mRNA COVID-19 vaccines preconditioned for during pregnancy and risk of self-reported spontaneous abortions, CDC V-Safe COVID-19 Vaccine Pregnancy Registry 2021. That's the title. So this is the absurd nature of what we're dealing with. They have an unreviewed study that hasn't been peer-reviewed, that we can't see, we can't verify. Their current approval information says we don't know the risks. The emergency authorization says it even more clearly that we don't know, we didn't test it, we don't know if it goes into breast milk and on and on and on. And yet here they are going, take it though anyway. It is just amazing that we have to pretend or even consider that we might be, like, this is just so verifiably, obviously dishonest. So take... I don't know. I'm trying to think of the right way to put it. The idea that, you know, not to be like, you're right, because I don't want to ever say that, you know, we know that we're right, because we don't, because we're going to continue to research this and new information could pop up that later changes it. But the evidence in front of us to going forward on right now is very obvious that they are telling people to take something that they're not sure is safe. I mean, that is like the antithesis of what FDA is supposed to be doing, right? I mean, just do it anyway, just in case. In case what? In case you... I mean, shouldn't we at the very least be considering that how old are you? Do you have any comorbidities? Oh, well, you have a one in a million risk. How about we don't give you the thing that has a much higher risk of myocarditis or a much higher risk of stroke or a much higher risk of blood clots or a much higher risk of encephalitis or a much higher risk of all the things we keep telling you, including things that show very clearly to have an effect on the child that's in her stomach. It's just disgusting. But that's the gist of what I was going to get into today, guys. The last thing I want to show you is this discussion, which I believe I've already pointed to in the past. Just to reiterate, Legal Information Institute, that's the website that we're on, law.cornell.edu, general requirements for informed consent. just a couple of interesting points here to realize this. As remember, informed consent, approved, emergency authorized, whatever, is supposed to be met before you do anything. Well, here are the requirements for that process. Remember, the process that they're not meeting, according to the peer-reviewed research that came out in December 2020 and then was peer-reviewed in March 2021. But continuing to confirm that if we don't do this thing, we're not meeting informed consent, and they have yet to do it. So, pretty simple. But it says, an investigator shall seek informed consent. Just so I don't forget to include it. You guys have seen many times talking about that specific and significant risk of antibody-dependent enhancement. It says, an investigator shall seek informed consent only under circumstances that provide the prospective subject, and this is kind of in the context of like a trial, but it applies in the same regard, or the legally authorized representative, which would be you taking the injection, sufficient opportunity to discuss and consider whether or not to participate, and that minimize the possibility of coercion or undue influence. Now, I guess the authorized representative could possibly be the person administering it to, but regardless, the point is that you have the possibility to, or rather than what they're doing, minimizes the possibility of coercion or undue influence. Do you feel like that's happening right now? Are you really going to pretend like we're not just like wildly over the top influencing, coercing, undue influence, just doing everything they can? You've been asked again, you've been knocking your door, you've been attacked, you've been fired, this is crazy town where we are right now. This is wildly over the top coercion, financial and societal. I always forget the word I was using in the beginning. It wasn't coercion, but anyway, it's the same point. Financial and societal coercion. They're using those things to force you into taking something that they pretend is totally your choice, though. Number four, the prospective subject or the legally authorized representative must be provided with the information that a reasonable person would want to have in order to make an informed decision about whether to participate, and an opportunity to discuss that information. Well, obviously, we're not given the opportunity to discuss this, because if you talk about it and challenge what they say, well, you're now a conspiracy theorist and you're a dangerous terrorist that needs to be censored, right? Because clearly that's the state of our discourse today. The problem is that we are not given the full information. I mean, look, if this clear document is telling you that the specific and significant risk of antibody-dependent enhancement should have been included, but it's not, which is the point of this, back in December 2020, well, they're not doing it. And it's still not as of today. Okay? So you're not getting the full information, because that's part of it that they know is there that you're not being told about. So yet again, they're not meeting their requirements. Then it says, informed consent as a whole must present information in sufficient detail relating to the research and must be organized and presented in a way that does not merely provide lists of isolated facts, which is exactly what they're doing, but not even that. But it says, but rather facilitates the prospective subject's or legally authorized representative's understanding of the reason why one might or might not want to participate. They're just throwing things at you and saying, that's the fact. If you question it, you're crazy. That's a big one they're not doing. Right? They're just merely giving you a list of facts. There's no research around it. There's no data. And look at what just happened with the committee. They didn't even give you the isolated facts on a list. They just said, we're good. We're not even going to do the meeting because we decided for you that there's no problem. If you can't see by now that this is so incredibly off the rails, like there's legal, like law is not even playing a factor in any of this. You can't see that by now. It's a willful choice, in my opinion. And you got people all around the world, medical doctors, PhDs, Nobel laureates, scientists standing up everywhere, pointing out that this is crazy. This is off the rails. I mean, that's the best way to put it. We are completely in another zone here. It says no informed consent may include any exculpatory language through which the subject or the legally authorized representative is made to waive or appear to waive any of the subject's legal rights. Oh, really? Well, that completely throws this out of the... That's obviously happening. Or releases or appears to release the investigator, the sponsor, the institution, or its agency from liability or negligence. What do you think about that? So pretty sure that the institution... Oh, dang it. Pretty sure that the institution, being, you know, the groups we're talking about here... Of course, I just lost everything I had highlighted. That's fantastic. Right there. There it is, right? We're talking about, you know, the companies we're talking about, Pfizer, or even specifically NIH or CDC, right? The bottom line is they are all removed from liability. So this is an obvious number six, right, in the list of the requirements for informed consent. They're not meeting. Added to the list. And don't forget the first one, though, right? You are being made to waive your rights. That's what's happening. That's why they're pretending it's a choice. Well, we're going to force you into taking a choice. Well, it's not a choice when you're coerced, which is the whole point of this comment up here, where you're being coerced, and that's why it's not a choice. They know what game they're playing. These people are removed from liability, and that is obviously wrong. Now, anyway, I think that's good because I lost my, I don't want to search in front of you. The bottom line is, though, there's a lot in here that there's obviously not being met. They know that. They don't care. The reality is that we need to call this stuff out and people need to continue to call this out. For some reason that's out of focus. And just continue to stand up as long as we can, because they're going to continue to try to stop us from speaking out. And I think it's going to become increasingly ridiculous the more we make it very clear that all we're doing is pointing out very clear, verifiable facts. That's it. I always give you my opinion around these things. And I make sure you do your due diligence, or I ask you to do your due diligence and look into it for yourself. But all we're using for the base of our discussion is peer-reviewed research, expert testimony, and yet we're being censored as fake news. I mean, how is that even possible today? It shows you where we really are. So thank you for being here and continuing to think for yourself. Research what we've discussed. Look at the links for yourself. You know, don't just take my word for it. Look at the information and come to your own conclusions. That is the antithesis of what they're trying to achieve today, because their goal is to get you to blindly trust what they say is the science instead of, you know, actually looking at the science, which is just so funny to me when you realize that these people are at some point probably going to realize that that's happening. Hopefully, if we're getting through to enough people, which I truly believe that we are. So thank you for being here. Under an hour, pretty short for KeyLab. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
And I know people must like to have their individual freedom and not be told to do something.
They're going
to
give a lot of incentive and backing for a lot of institutions and organizations and places of employment to mandate. And that could be colleges, university, the military, organizations that employ a lot of people. Some of the big corporations are going to say, if you want to work for us in person, you've got to be there and get vaccinated. And I think that's a good thing. I know I respect people's freedom. 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 I